Pastor Joe.
And I'm Kirsten.
We've served in church leadership for over two decades.
And most of that, we've been on staff together.
We're here to talk about our faith, family, and ministry.
Welcome to Under the Hood. Okay, I have a question for you.
What's that?
What's a synonym to pancake?
Synonym to pancake?
Isn't
that's
that
a
the
weird
word?
Question.
Synonym? Cinnamon? Synonym.
Like to mean the same thing
yeah.
as pancake?
What's a synonym
Latin?
For pancake?
Well, Microsoft Word gives no synonyms
Are
for pancake.
Are you cheating?
I typed it in while you asked
Are
me.
Are you using it as a verb? Like if you pancake something?
No,
or you
like
talking
I'm
about
eating
it
a
now?
Pancake.
Oh.
A synonym for pancake?
Can you have a synonym for pancake?
Something similar, like a small-shaped, floury cooked disc?
Like a thick crepe?
That's exactly what I thought. A crepe. It's yeah. a synonym for pancake.
Why does anyone care?
I just, random thoughts.
Welcome to my life, ladies and gentlemen. Random it's thoughts that don't mean anything, apply to nothing, and but are serious in the moment, right now, gotta know. I guess, is that just called marriage?
Synonym to pancake. Some people need to know this. It's just like a challenging thought today.
There is no synonym to pancake.
A crepe.
But a crepe is not a pancake.
I think you should go get me one of those.
A crepe.
Do you know we have a great crepe shop here in Northwest Arkansas?
Crepe Paulette. Right?
Yes, and they're from France. Brock and Neil go to school with their kids. They're in the orchestra.
Can they
Not
get
Brock
us some
and
free
Neil.
Crepes?
Neil's no longer
yeah,
here.
Yeah, Neil's no longer there, but I don't know. I've never gotten a discount. And they're not cheap, but they are worth every penny.
What do they have there? It's been a long
they have
time.
Savory
they have
and
sweet,
sweet
and savory.
But I don't ever get it. I don't think I've ever had one of their savory crepes, but I have for sure had their butter, sugar, strawberry crepe.
The
and
first,
I highly recommend it.
The first crepe.
It's simple and delicious.
The first crepe I've ever had was in Kansas City. We went to a restaurant. It was an Italian buffet. I love this buffet. I will not say what it is.
Why?
Well, I mean, nobody here knows what it is, but you know what?
Yeah, but if you're in Kansas City, you might want to go.
All right. Well, the place is called Cinzetti's, and it's an Italian buffet.
Cinzetti's with a C.
Right. And so we used to go some when we lived up there, and then once in a while we're going through, we'll go there.
It's not close to where
I would
live,
say,
but
I would emphasize the word sin, Zeddy's, because you feel like you've sinned by how much food you eat there.
I have to say this because most people know I do not like buffets.
Right.
Cannot handle it. Okay. So a family in our church invited us to go there one time, and it was our first time to go. Just Joe and I, we left the kids at home. And
this was years ago.
I was impressed. For a buffet, they had little stations, and behind the station was a chef cooking the food fresh in that little station. So you knew the little pot of chicken or mashed potatoes was fresh, even though it had a handle and you had to serve it. You knew only 5 or 6 people had touched it and not 45 people. And so I was like, okay, I think I can handle this place.
But we really enjoy the food there. But
it's so, it really is
had,
good.
They had a crepes bar. So they had one of their chefs back there. You walk up there and you could order a crepe and you could get one, you get any filling you wanted. But basically they had a chocolate filling, a vanilla filling, and a
fruit.
No. Fruit.
Like
fruit, sorry.
Cream cheese.
So they're cooking the crepe in front of you, and then you can fill it with bananas or strawberries, whatever, with their homemade whipped cream, and then they would roll it up, and then they would drizzle it with one of three sauces or all of them, a caramel sauce, a vanilla sauce, or a chocolate sauce.
They also had fresh strawberries, which you probably didn't know about because you would not have
gotten
those.
Touch the berries. Don't like berries. But anyway, I would do one filled with bananas and whipped cream drizzled with caramel, chocolate, and vanilla. And it was awesome.
Now, my question would be to anyone where the crepes come from, is that from a different part of France? Because those crepes in Kansas City are very different than the crepes from here in Northwest Arkansas, from that place called Crepes Paulette. I think that's what it is. The Crepes Paulette place has this really big crepe, and then it's almost crispy when you eat it. Right? Have you had one? Abby, what?
I've never been there. I've just driven by it a bunch of times.
Are you serious? Okay, we're going to Crepes Follett.
Field trip.
I'm serious. It's so delicious, but they serve them folded up in like a triangle with foil. But the place in Kansas City, those crepes are rolled and very soft like a pancake.
Well, it just depends on where you
this conversation has come full circle, and they've rolled it and put stuff in it. Now, Crepes Paulette does too, but it's got to be a different kind of crepe. I've made crepes at home. My crepes are not good as like Crepes Paulette. So I don't know.
Well, if you have a restaurant called Crepes Paulette and that's your thing, it better be the best around. Like you should not be able to produce as good a crepe as they do.
They have pretty good crepes, and I've seen them make a crepe cake before on their social media. And Abby's eyes are like stirring with interest.
I got a question for you. Did you come into this today hungry?
I have a question for you. How dare you?
Can I tell you, like right before we started recording today, Kirsten, I'm just going to describe it to you.
So now we're going to need a photo for the show notes.
She walks in here and she's got, I'm going to describe this as like a off-white green sludge something. And it doesn't even smell very good. It doesn't smell good at all. And I'm just being honest with you. It's and so talking about crepes is way better than looking at this. And my wife, if she wants you to try something, there's no getting it. She's going to force feed you to eat this. So she's like, hey, try this.
I didn't force feed Abby.
No.
Well, that's different. You're not married to Abby. She's like, try this. I'm like, I don't want to try that. It looks disgusting. She goes, no, try it.
You didn't say it looked disgusting.
Well, I don't always say what I'm thinking. And
why?
It's got, I like avocados, and it's got eggs in it. She goes, like, it's like an egg salad. And I'm like, fine. And I'm like, ugh. And I took a bite of it.
You didn't
It does not smell good. And I know I said it was okay. And that's when she dropped the bomb.
I had to leave some information
She
out.
Said it's full of cottage cheese. I'm like, I don't know how you guys feel about cottage cheese. I don't like it. Now, you could mix some cottage cheese in a lasagna, and I can get through that. But I like ricotta cheese. But I'm telling you, I don't like cottage cheese at all. Let's just turn this podcast into...
Can you hear it?
Oh, no. Oh,
that's... Oh,
it's like an egg salad, but it literally is a half an avocado, 3 boiled eggs, and 19 grams of protein cottage cheese.
Let's just make this podcast, the start of our podcast, all the things that we don't like.
Wait. What do you not like that we've talked about so far?
Cottage cheese. And can I tell you about, can I just tell you about how bad cottage cheese is? Listen, I used to know people that used to take cantaloupe or peaches and scoop spoonfuls of cottage cheese on top of it.
And half the listeners right now are saying,
no.
And what's the problem?
No, and it's disgusting. And I'm like, how do you eat that garbage? That looks terrible.
See, and it this smells proves terrible. My point that smells, Joe Williams is a picky eater.
Smells terrible, looks terrible, tastes terrible. But the people I'm referring to loved it.
I grew up eating cottage cheese and fruit.
Abby, do you eat cottage cheese?
Yeah.
I mean, just by itself.
Yes.
Like, could you open up a container of cottage cheese and just eat it?
It's a great healthy snack.
Oh, I feel like I'm learning so much about you right now. And I already knew this about Kirsten, but... So you eat cottage cheese just raw cottage cheese?
Babe. Yes. You don't.
What do you like about it?
Cook it.
Yes. What do you
raw? Like? He said raw cottage cheese. You eat raw cottage cheese? Like,
you just pop the lid.
Do you want me to microwave it first?
That's because he knows I cook with it too. And you eat cottage cheese almost every morning Kirsten in the breakfast casserole that I make you that you love.
That's different. You can't taste it. Kirsten's always trying to cram stuff into my diet. Like,
everybody feels sorry for you.
Oh my goodness.
You're unhealthy and I'm so sorry.
So Abby, how much cottage cheese do you think you consume in an average week? I mean, is this like something like, hey kids, you want to watch a movie?
You don't have to answer his questions.
Like, is it one of those things where you're like, hey boys, let's watch a movie. Let's crack open a tub of cottage cheese. Is it like one of those things? No.
Oh my word.
No. But I mean, we could eat like probably a quart in a week.
Okay.
Your boys eat it?
No.
Okay.
Just me.
Maybe it's just men. Boys don't
eat. I don't know. Joe doesn't eat berries. So like.
Something's wrong with him. But berries? We should do a
strawberries?
Poll. We should do a poll on our social media. If there's any like men versus women, because it sounds like more females are prone to eating cottage cheese than men. Because I don't think my dad likes it either.
Really?
Can I tell you what my dad used to do? Gross me out. I don't know if you guys do this. My dad used to boil prunes or steam prunes at home. And I mean, the whole kitchen, the whole, it would stink. And I'd walk through and there's this steaming, boily pot of prunes. And then he would just eat them.
And I'm like, boiled prunes?
Like steamed prunes or plums.
You don't know? I think plums turn into prunes when they're dried.
Is that right?
Is this right?
So
okay, I think they were prunes, and you'd buy the prune, and he would like boil them or steam them, or he'd pull them out of the boiled. He'd boil them, and then they would. Either way, it was. They looked disgusting.
Aren't right, plums? Yeah, plums. Fresh plums. If you dry them, they turn into prunes.
Yes. And like, it's supposed to keep your digestion working.
Your
properly.
Bowels will run.
So maybe that was smooth. A clue into your
Abby,
death.
Abby hesitated briefly. She's like, well, they're supposed.
Yep.
Your Abby gets real. Abby
your dad
gets real.
Must have had an issue.
So
just like raisins used to be grapes.
Well, I know that.
Prunes used to
I
be
got
plums.
It. I got
Do
it.
You like plums?
No.
So you don't like prunes?
I know where this is going. Let me set the record straight for everybody. Kirsten's about to tell you that I don't like fruit, and that is not true. I love fruit. I love apples. I'm going to give you the whole, I'm break it down for you right now.
You love apples cooked?
No, stop. Let me just do this.
Dried?
No, you're in front of me.
Dehydrated?
I love apples, oranges, bananas, grapes. I love fruit. I'm not a big fan.
Wait, how many did you list there? Four?
The basic ones. I am not a big fan when you cook fruit. So when you cook an apple, like for an apple pie, I don't care for that.
When you say you don't care for that, that's a very nice
I
way
don't
of
like
saying,
apple pie.
Yeah,
I'm not a fan of apple pie. I can eat it.
But do you?
No, I don't.
And you don't like it, and it would repulse you.
No, the repulse is not. I don't care for cooked apples. So cooked apples or an apple pie. I don't.
What would it taste like if you put
no? We're
a
not doing
apple
that.
In your
We're not doing that. I can tell you what it tastes like. To me, I feel like I'm eating slugs. Okay, slimy slugs sliding right down.
Isn't that weird?
It's a little bit texture. It's a texture thing.
Okay.
And here's the other thing. When it comes to berries, I just have never, not my whole life, ever acquired the taste for like strawberries or cranberries or
blueberries.
I haven't found one that I like or anything that rhymes with berries.
How
like
about star
cherries.
Fruit? How about star fruit?
I don't know. What
mango?
Well, I like mango salsa. But I'm just telling you, so I like basic fruits, apples,
We've
oranges,
been here before
bananas.
In the podcast.
We have a whole episode called fruit.
It's regurgitating same
I'm just
information.
Because I knew you were about to tell everybody I don't like fruit. And I'm saying I love
he
fruit.
He doesn't. And I know he really tries to like fruit, but he likes like four fruits. Literally the ones he just listed.
I like pineapple.
A fresh.
Especially when you put it on a pizza for
you like
ham.
You like fresh pineapple?
Yeah. I can eat
canned pineapple.
I love canned pineapples. Yeah. But
when do you eat it?
When I put it on a Canadian bacon and pineapple pizza. And then you can cook it. It's just fine. So there you go.
Oh,
that's my
go.
Philosophy on fruit eating. But you know what? Nothing's more fun than to like cut up a nice crisp honey crisp apple that's been chilled in the refrigerator and take a little bit of peanut butter and eat that honey crisp apple with peanut butter. I love that.
I was telling Abby the other day, I had an apple. And I not cut it well. And I said, well, I'm spoiled at home because Joe does most of the apple cutting at our house.
I am a great apple
and
cutter.
And he cores it and then he puts a little glob of peanut butter in the middle and it's like the perfect snack. And he is the best apple cutter in the whole house.
All you do is you chop it in half and you take a nice sharp knife and you just grab the apple in one hand. You got half of it and you stick the knife in and you go whoo, one quick motion, decore it, boom. Creates a little pocket in there, slap it full of peanut butter, bam.
And it is, it's, you're good at that. Thanks, babe.
Thank you. It's nice to hear you say I'm good at something.
You are. What? You're good at dissecting what you will and won't eat. Cottage cheese apparently is disgusting. And I put it in my eggs every morning.
Okay, I am no different than anybody else. We have our likes and okay. We have our dislikes.
Who doesn't eat cottage cheese? We need to hear from you.
This past weekend, I was in Luke chapter 5, verses 1 through 11. And can I just tell you, you know, if I didn't make this clear already over the weekend, just how much I love this passage of scripture and just how personally connected I feel to it. I mean, I just love this moment where Jesus officially calls his disciples to follow him. You know, Peter and Andrew, James and John specifically, they had already been with Jesus quite a bit. I mean, this first year they had spent a lot of time with Jesus. You know, right after he came back from the wilderness is where he meets some of them and they travel with him. They're part of his first miracle in Cana and they saw him cleanse the temple. There's things. But by this point in our study, I think the disciples have gone back to Capernaum and some are from Bethsaida and they've resumed fishing in their lives. I'd imagine after following Jesus around for a number of months, they got bills to pay, you know. So Jesus is off in Nazareth and I don't see in the text, I haven't found the text that there's any record of the disciples being with them. Doesn't mean they weren't there, but he gets rejected. You know, they about want to throw Jesus off the cliff and then he goes to Capernaum and this will be his home base. And, you know, this is something, if you watch the Chosen series, I think they do a good job in that first two seasons where Jesus kind of floats in and floats out. Sometimes he's with his followers, sometimes he's not. There's conversation about, hey, have you guys seen Jesus lately? Well, he said he'll be back at when, you know. And I do think they kind of capture this movement, especially this first year of Jesus's ministry. The disciples are doing their thing, and I think they're out there fishing, and then here comes Jesus. He's got a lot of people that are following him, and like they're very interested. I mean, the scripture tells us he's all over Galilee preaching about the kingdom of heaven has come near, performing miracles. And on this particular day, he is teaching, and there's a large crowd, and it backs him up to the shore of the Sea of Galilee. And this is near Capernaum. Okay. And now the three of us, we've been in Capernaum. You guys remember how awesome that was?
Yeah.
Capernaum is one of my favorite stops. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I took this picture or somebody, but some of the pictures we have right at the shore of the city of Capernaum, it's just beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So somewhere near here, somewhere near that moment, and I know the three of us can visualize what that looked like. So somewhere right off those waters, Jesus is teaching. And the crowd is so large that he gets backed up to the water's edge. And it just so happens, or does it, that Jesus is right next to Peter's boat. Peter and the others had been fishing all night long. Scriptures say they've caught nothing. Mm-hmm. They're cleaning their nets. So Jesus gets out into Peter's boat, puts out just a few feet off of shore, sits down, and teaches the people. So you kind of got this scene. Mm-hmm. I love this moment. I really do. After Jesus is done teaching, he tells Peter, hey, go back out and put your nets down in the deep water for a catch. And Peter says what? He goes, oh, master, we've worked hard all night long and caught nothing. Mm-hmm. Which would be my response.
Yeah.
This isn't pleasure We're fishing. Done. This isn't like kicking back in your boat or off a dock and have a line over there. No, this is hard work of dropping nets, raising nets, dropping nets all night long. And they've caught nothing. Give me a fruitless night. And they're about done, I would imagine, cleaning their nets. And Jesus says, no, just drop it down one more time. And he says something. He goes, master, we've worked hard. That word master is the correct word. Mm-hmm. What has he already seen Jesus do?
Everything.
Turn water into wine.
Miracles.
I mean, master is a good word. Mm-hmm. But then he says something. He like gets an A+ for this answer. But because you say so,
yeah,
I'll do it. And then you guys know the story. If you heard the sermon, he pulls up so much fish, it about overwhelms the boat. It's about, if they had bills to pay because they traveled with Jesus, they had backed bills, they're covered, okay, all these fish. And it's in that moment that Peter gets called into ministry, like literally calls to be a follower of Jesus. So the boat, you know, he had to get help out there and the boat's about to sink. There's so much fish. And he falls at Jesus' feet and he says, go away from me, Lord, I'm a sinful man. Mm. But here's a nuance change. He says, go away from me, Lord. He didn't say go away from master. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to make a bigger deal out of this, but is it now maybe the first time Peter is seeing Jesus not just as a VIP, a master, but now as a Lord? Mm. And he says, go away from me, I'm a sinful man. And Jesus says, from now on, you'll be a fisher of men. In other words, your whole life trajectory is going to change. And then he and the other, they all left their livelihood behind and followed Jesus. I love that store because I don't think, and I don't, I mean, I know for a fact, Jesus wasn't just randomly walking down the coast that day and randomly was teaching and just randomly got into Peter's boat. That was like a divine appointment.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a conversation with our staff here recently about divine appointments. Like I believe divine appointments happen now to this mm-hmm. day. I feel like God allows things to come together for the purpose of, you know, giving his messages to us or making us aware or open. And so, you know, we asked the staff here recently, like, talk about some divine appointments. We had some really great feedback in there. But I love this moment of this great visual. It kind of reminds me, not the same way, but as I was thinking about this, about my own calling into ministry. And I feel like God divinely appointed a moment to get my attention. The great catch of fish, God, you know, Jesus used that to get Peter's attention. And, you know, if Jesus would have said, hey, Peter, I want you to follow me. I want you to leave everything behind. I want you to go with me. I think he still would have done it. But there was a miracle that accompanied that. It was like, look at this overwhelming catch of fish that Jesus provided. Jesus knew where the fish were, where to go. And I think what Peter could have said to Jesus, I'm a fisherman. I've been fishing these waters my whole life. You're a carpenter. What's a carpenter know about fishing? Don't tell me when the right time to fish is. But he didn't. He just did it. He obeyed. And look at this huge catch of fish. What a visual when he says, now on, you're going to fish for people. What he means is your whole life, you're going to be now doing something complete. You're still going to be in the fishing business. You're just trying to catch something else. You're trying to catch people for the kingdom. And look at this overwhelming catch. If I can fill your boat full of fish, just think what I can fill your future with. Anyway, it was a powerful visual. It reminds me of like when I got called into ministry. I was 19 years old, and I've told this story before, but I'll quickly retell it. We picked up a few new listeners since last time I told the story. But, you know, I was 19 years old, and I was doing a summer internship at a little church in Oklahoma. And there's a whole backstory of even how I ended up there. I had was not going back to Bible college. I'd already finished a year of Bible college. I was enrolled at a different university. My life was headed a different direction. But I found myself serving in this little church that summer after my freshman year in college. And my last week there, the preacher of that church said, hey, Joe, before you go, your last Sunday here, I want you to preach. I'm like, that was the weird request to me. It was weird, weird, weird. What do you want me to preach for? I don't preach. That's not what I do. I'm not interested in it. But I told him yes. You know, he was very persistent. I remember calling my dad, who at the time lived a couple hours away, who's the greatest preacher ever. And I said, Dad, you got to help me. The pastor over here wants me to preach. So he drove halfway there. I drove the other half, and we met each other in the middle. And he helped me write this sermon. We sat at a McDonald's.
Aww.
Off the highway. I don't know if it's still there or not, but there used to be a McDonald's halfway between Oklahoma City and Tulsa.
Was that the one that went across the highway?
No, that's closer to Joplin.
Oh, okay.
But somewhere, I think it was a McDonald's or something. We sat there for a couple hours and ate, and we worked on this sermon. And I don't think the sermon was anything to write home about, but you know, it got it done. And I preached that sermon my last Sunday. And then I sat down, and the preacher stood up and he offered the invitation. This was still one of those churches that did an altar call at the end of every sermon. And it's a small church, but I watched 9 people get up out of their seat and come down.
Wow.
And make some kind of decision. And 8 of them went down first. And then I sat there watching this, and it was just in that overwhelming moment, I was like, I have to go back to Ozark Christian College, and I have to do this. It was like some of the most clarity I've ever had in my whole life. Can't explain it. But when people ask me, Joe, how did you know you were called into ministry? I tell them, I think there was a divine appointed moment with a visual attached to it for God to get my attention. So I guarantee you, this was not the greatest sermon that ever got preached at that church. I promise you that. But have all these people. And so I'm sitting there watching this. You know, imagine the music is playing. Ethel or whoever's playing the piano.
Ethel.
I surrender all, or whatever the song was. And these people are coming forward, and they're making decisions for whatnot, whatever it was. And some kind of decision for Jesus. And then I walk down front. And the pastor goes, what are you doing down here? And I said, I just feel like in this moment, I'm 19 years old. I just feel like in this moment, God is telling me I'm supposed to go back to Bible college and give the rest of my life to serving him. And I told the whole church that.
Wow.
And of course, they clapped. And then, of course, I only had a week to get things turned around because school started in 1 week because I had to cancel all my plans. And I went back to Ozark Christian College for my second year. I didn't know what that meant exactly.
I want to know what your dad said.
I think he was happy about it. My dad never pressured me to go into ministry.
Did you call him?
Yeah.
Say, hey, I came forward.
Yeah. Yeah. He was proud of that for sure. But, you know, he never pressured me to do this.
Yeah.
I mean, I think my dad, of all people, knows how challenging this line of work can be. And so I went back to Ozark, not knowing what that meant. But all I'm saying is that it would be a little bit later that I felt like God was calling me into preaching ministry and to do this, which I never did anything else. I never went to student ministry or associate ministry. I went straight into preaching right out of Bible college. But what I'm saying is, just like Peter had that great catch of fish to really get his attention and to humble him and to say, and he changed the whole trajectory of your life. I'm not saying it's the same thing, but I think it was a divinely appointed moment that God used that church, those people, that preacher, that moment to get my attention about what I was supposed to do with the rest of my life. And so everything changed after that moment. I mean, literally everything changed. And so, I'm here I am today, all these years later, doing this. I have no regrets whatsoever. And it's not like I became a Christian that day. I was already following Jesus.
Right.
It's just I had no plans to be a fisher of men. I think
you're
that's
feeling
why
the call.
I think that's why this passage resonates with me. And hopefully, you if you were at church this weekend, you saw that. But I've preached Luke 5 more times than I can remember. I'd have to go back and look. I've probably preached this exact passage 4 or 5 times here at New Life. But I just love it. It feels fresh every time I come to it. And
When you preach the same text, do you use the same sermon or do you rewrite a sermon?
Oh, that's a good question.
Because sometimes you like say the same stories, or you'll say, I've shared the story before, but it's been 9 years ago, or you know, something like that. How do you decide and where do you come up with those?
Ooh, I don't know.
Did I stump the,
teacher? No, to answer your question, I do go back and like, in case anybody are wondering, I write my sermons out full manuscript. So I'll script out my sermon from start to finish. Mm-hmm. And my manuscripts run anywhere from 8 to 13 pages in length.
Holy cow, they're not supposed to be 13.
So
we have no time constraints, 13's fine.
So I have a record of full manuscripts sermons going back over 20 years.
Wow.
That I have saved. So to answer your question, I will go back and see what I've done in the past, and I will look at old sermons and sometimes borrow material from old sermons that I've preached and written. You know,
Do you ever borrow stuff from other people?
No.
Other preachers?
Well, I mean, now let me clarify that. I listen to a lot of preaching, and so of course, if I hear a story or somebody makes a great point, I'll try to incorporate that in. I mean, we're all learning from one another. I'm a learner just like everybody else. If I'm looking at an old sermon, like I've got several sermons in my files that I've preached on Luke chapter 5, and of course, I'll look at those.
Yeah.
But then I try to make them always feel fresh and try to work. And I'll still go through and study, just like I would any other text that I may be less familiar with.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the scriptures don't change.
Right.
But seasons of life change. And so how a particular text, and maybe you've had this experience before where you're reading something, you're like, I've read this story 100 times, but it impacts you in a brand new way because of whatever you're going through in your life. The word of God didn't change.
Right.
But your receptivity and maybe what you're going through changes quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So I keep that in mind that every time I study very familiar territory, things I've preached for many, many times, where I'm at and my station in life is totally different.
Mm-hmm.
So I go back and look at old sermons that I've preached, but I want them to always feel fresh in my heart first. If the text and the study is fresh in my heart, then I know it will come out fresh and passionate it on when I preach it live. Mm-hmm. But you know, there's been a couple occasions where I'll joke it like this. I'll go back in the files and find one and it doesn't need a lot of changing. I'll shake the dust off of it, you know, figuratively and kind of freshen up a little bit. I'm not going to deny there's been a little bit of that, but it's all in, you know.
For sure. Well, you wrote it too, but
yeah, I wrote it. But
sometimes sermons have to be re-preached too. And I know preachers who travel re-preach a lot of the same stuff and not have time to rewrite stuff. But your dad was a preaching evangelist back in his day.
Back when he was a younger man, like that whole generation, a lot of them, you know, they supplemented their incomes and made it and made names for themselves by traveling all over doing revivals,
yeah.
You know. And so my dad built a reputation for himself as a revivalist. And
it's fun to run into people and be like, oh, yeah, I know your dad. Oh, yeah. He came and preached at my home church when I was just 9 years old and all kinds of fun stories. When your dad passed away, someone sent me a bulletin from a revival that he came and preached at church. So, and I was like, whoa. And it was like a picture of you on the cover of the bulletin. It was like, whoa. But it was Joe. It was your dad.
So I have a file at my house where when my dad died, you know, we were kind of going through some of the stuff. You know, what do you keep? What do you get rid of? You know, preachers are hoarders, you know, so we tend to keep a lot of stuff. But I'll tell you, one of the things that I treasure, and I have it at home, and one of these days I'm going to do something with it. But I've got a whole folder of during that revival season where he kept the flyers from like all these churches he went and preached in. They would do these flyers. They'd hang up over the church and hang up around town. You know, evangelist Dick Williams is coming. Cool. And so pictures of him as a young man and all these revival flyers. And I thought, you know, at a minimum, I'll put them in some protective sleeves and put them in a album or something. But, you know, that's one of those real treasures. Cool. I didn't know they existed. I didn't know any of that existed until my dad passed away. So I've got a few things there. I've got a statue of a roadrunner in my office that I didn't even know it was still around. But my dad had this in his office. And I remember as a little boy going into his office and looking at this roadrunner. And I just, it was always a fixture in every office that he had. I have no idea where my dad got it or why he had it. But it's a roadrunner. It's one of those memories I have of his office.
It'd be offices. Cool to know what that's from. Like,
I don't know
why it was in his office.
But my brother called me, I don't know, 6, 8, 9 months, maybe a year after my dad passed away. And he goes, hey, you remember that Roadrunner dad had in his office? I'm like, yeah. He goes, I got it. And I said, you've got the Roadrunner? He goes, yeah. And I said, I didn't know it was still around. And he goes, no, I grabbed it for you. Because as we were going, you know, we weren't all together always going through, you know, with everything I do. And he said, no, I grabbed it. And I meant to tell you that I thought you'd want it for your office.
Aww,
and I sure do. And it's in my office right now. It's on display.
Tim coming through.
So, but you know, but yeah, I'm going to do something with those things one day when it's just like with everything, when you have time to mess with it. But yeah, that's how I got called into ministry. And I feel like coming back, it was one of those divine moments. Like, and I've wondered often, God, did I know your hand was in that, but did you, I feel like you orchestrated that to get my attention, mm-hmm. to guide me in the direction. And I think there's been many times in my life through the years, he has affirmed that in me. And then, you know, like I could tell you some stories about where similar things have happened before. And, you know, I'm not one of those guys that's like, you know, I do believe that God is more involved in our daily lives than we'll ever give him credit for. I think that he's way more involved, but I'm not one of those guys that's like every single movement I make, you know, oh, God did this or God moved that. We got like, you know, mm-hmm. but I do think there's moment, and maybe he is, mm-hmm. you know, I learned a long time ago, I don't tell God how to do or how to be God. You know, he can do whatever he wants. He doesn't need my permission at all.
Do that.
And so, I mean, I'm just like, there's probably, if truth be known, there's probably a lot more of that than what I realize. But there's been a few times where I take a step back and I'm like, God, I think you just did something there. Have I told on air the story of getting a flat tire? Have I told that story on air, Abby?
You got a flat tire?
I think so.
Did I tell the story of like, I feel like.
Yes, you thought it was an angel.
I don't know what it could have been.
Yeah.
I don't remember what episode that is, but I remember driving away from that with such clarity. Like, that all happened because God needed me to know something. Mm-hmm. And that interaction right there on the side of the highway with a flat tire with a police officer
in a suit.
It was just one of those moments. I'm going, God, I know. I remember rolling down my window and driving down the way, yelling out like, "All right, God, I got the message."
Yeah.
You know, and anyway, I just kind of reminiscing about that. That's I think why I love this passage, because I think this was a divinely appointed moment between Jesus and Peter and the other disciples. And I would love, I'll tell you what, I would love to hear from any of our listeners if you've had a similar experience like that. Like did you have you ever had a moment where you knew, like if you had to pinpoint something in your life, like, I think God absolutely orchestrated that. Now, you guys know last week's podcast, I hope you guys were so blessed by Robert and Jennifer's story, the two-part podcast that preceded this one. And, you know, Rob talked a lot about, he called them God moments. You know, he's like, there's too many things that have been happening in my life that God's not involved. I would love to know if anybody would be willing to share with us what your God moments have been, where you might say, I think God orchestrated this for my benefit and for my insight. I'd love to read those. I love to read stories about, you know, I'm not going to share them on air without permission. Of course, I would never do that, but you know, I would love to know how you feel like God has moved in and out of your life to bring your attention to stuff. And anyway, I just love this passage of scripture. And Luke chapter 5 is just one of those really special moments in the text. Well, Kirsten, why don't we tell everybody, you're not going to be on the podcast for a few weeks because you're about to have surgery.
I am.
And so actually, by the time this podcast goes live, your surgery will be over and you'll
be in recovery.
You'll be in recovery. But that surgery will keep you off the air for, I'm assuming, a couple weeks. We really don't know how quickly this recovery, but we're going to have, where the podcast will continue. We're going to have some guests on here. I'll hold down the fort while Kirsten is recovering. But I certainly would ask you guys to pray for Kirsten, and she'll have a couple days in the hospital after this surgery, and then it'll take her a few weeks. What's the doctor saying, about 6 weeks recovery time?
6 to 8. I'm going to take the full 8.
Do it.
That's my joke. I tell people.
Oh, unload the dishwasher. I can't.
I tell people, if I ever get COVID again, I'm taking the full 14 days.
I can't lift those groceries.
But so in case you guys are wondering, in the weeks ahead, why Kirsten's not on there, it's because of the surgery. And I would just ask that you pray for her and for a quick recovery. I know it'll be a full recovery and it'll be a little bit of disruption to her life, but that's going on. And so it'll be a little bit of change to the format of the podcast. Kirsten, I will do my best to hold down the fort.
I have no doubt that you are going to be able to do a podcast completely on your own.
Well, I'm not going to do it on my own.
Has a lot of words.
I do have a lot of words.
He could run circles around any female when it comes to words. You have the ability to do a full podcast on your own by yourself every single day.
Are you talking yourself out of a job right now?
No, I'm saying.
Oh no. I mean, Kirsten brings flavor. We need you back. You will be missed.
So are we saying it's going to be a flavorless podcast? I'm having a hysterectomy. So I would like the prayers. Thank you. But I'll be gone, but I'll be back as soon as possible.
Yes. And
But I am going to soak it up. Joe is going to have to wait on me hand and foot. We're like, oh, I need.
I already wait on you hand and foot. What are you talking about?
And then he'll bring the hot chocolate. Oh no, I want it with sprinkles. And then he'll bring sprinkles. Oh, it's not hot anymore. Can you warm it up?
That sounds like just my normal day. What are you talking about? That just sounds like a normal evening at the Williams home.
Oh my! Do you have a bell?
I'm going to.
There will be no bells or buzzers.
Here, do you guys know that the Apple Watch has a walkie-talkie feature? And I've had to use it a few times because here's the lovely thing about the walkie-talkie feature: if your spouse doesn't answer his phone or text, You can interrupt him with a walkie-talkie feature. Ooh. No matter what he's doing. And so as long as you can connect, and you have to have already accepted that person ahead of time as a person who can walkie-talkie you. And so there have been a few times that I'm like, this guy is ignoring me or something.
I don't ever ignore you. What are you talking about?
To get a hold of him. And so you can walkie-talkie and it will interrupt him. So
walkie-talkie right now and listen to the noise it makes.
What are you talking about?
Try to send me a walkie-talkie message right now.
Yeah, put it up to the mic.
This is the sound it makes.
Let me see if I can get it.
Well, while you're doing that, I will just say that for the next few weeks, I've got some guests that I'm going to invite on here, so I'm not going to do it by myself. Even though Kirsten has full confidence in me to carry the full podcast by myself.
It actually would be interesting if you did do a podcast.
I don't think anybody wants to listen to me talk the whole time. We need each other. We need the back and forth.
But I think you'd be surprised how much people would enjoy it. They'd be like, can that Kirsten quit interrupting them?
Wait, that's where my thoughts usually. What? No. But
thanks, babe.
But you know, we're still lining it up to get these guests. But there's going to be a couple weeks here. I'm really excited. Oh, did you hear it? Do it again.
Well, it's telling me to check. Did it beep you?
No, it did. This is the sound it makes. Sometimes I hear this when I'm working, and I'll have my phone on silent or whatever. But
Joe, can you hear me?
Joe, can you hear me? Joe.
Yep. Did you hear that? That's what it does.
It's such a great feature. So that will come,
and then I can respond by saying, yes, I heard you. And it says you that little walkie-talkie feature.
Isn't it amazing?
Wow. So it makes this little doo-doo-doo sound.
So there have been a few. We've had our Apple Watches for quite a few years, and we probably have only had to do that like two or three times.
I've never had to do that. Kirsten.
Okay, listen, buddy. This guy has an iPhone and does not get my text messages. And every evening we'll go home together. I'm like, you didn't even respond to my text. What text? He immediately grabs his phone, opens it up, looks, oh, I didn't see your 14 messages.
Well,
and I'm like, how does your phone not ding? And sometimes it's like, hey, do you want lunch?
If my phone,
hey, do you want lunch? Hello.
If I don't put my phone on silence, all I hear between, you know, the different group texts I'm on is like ding, ding, and it gets annoying. So I turn it off silence. But I don't sometimes. But here's the reality.
I'm shaking my head because
most
you can mute everybody else.
Most
and
days,
have needs, I'm like important.
Most days, I'm deep in thought and prayer and meditation, and so I wouldn't hear those things anyway.
Oh, baloney! You need to make me like the one person that can ding you, and then everybody else can't like interrupt you. It's called do not disturb.
I think I've got it set up just about right. So.
I'm going to bother you now. I'm going to bother you now.
Hello.
Yeah, there you go.
All right.
Well,
guys.
Anyway, in all seriousness, I think the next few weeks we'll have a little different flavor on the podcast, but do be praying for Kirsten. Like I said, by the time you hear this, she will have just gotten out of surgery. She'll be in recovery, still in the hospital. And please, we from the bottom of our hearts, please say a prayer for her for a quick recovery.
That's all for today's show. We want to thank our amazing producer, Abby O'Brien. Be sure to check out our show notes and the links for things that we talked about today. And don't forget to subscribe. Thanks for joining us on
Under the Hood, not a car show.
Was that one good?
Mm-hmm.
Was that one better? The tiramisu one?
I wouldn't call it better. They're both amazing.
Sorry you ate both of those right away.
Sorry.
I'm glad you enjoyed them.
Sorry, I have no self-control.
I should have gotten you more.